For June 16th, 2016, it's the Lullabot Podcast. Everybody, it's the Lullabot Podcast, episode 189. I'm Matt Cleave, a senior developer at Lullabot. With me, co-host Mike Herschel, front-end developer. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how are you doing?
Great. We get together about every other week, Thursdays. Mm-hmm. We talk about Drupal.
And stuff.
Projects.
And things.
Mike's dog. You know, whatever.
Yes. He's a good boy.
Things that are happening at Lullabot. And this week, we have an exciting one. We're talking about project management.
Project management is a big one.
Now, before everybody goes away, it's kind of an important part of every project, right? I mean, yeah. Project management is something that can, a good project manager can make or break a project.
Absolutely. I have seen that.
Along for the ride, we have some great project managers that are Lullabots.
Yes.
They're here with us.
Are they?
I'm told. Jessica Machetsky is a technical project manager at Lullabot. She hails from Austin, Texas. Howdy, y'all.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, Jess.
We also have Darren Peterson from Portland, Oregon. He is a senior technical project manager here at Lullabot.
Senior means I'm old.
Whoa. And Portland means you're hipster.
Sean Lang is a development manager at Lullabot. He's from San Diego, California. Hey, Sean.
How's it going?
And also hailing from the Twin Cities of Minnesota, we have a senior developer at Lullabot who is on the podcast for his sultry voice, Adrian Young.
Thanks for the introduction, everybody.
Plus, Mike, you know, we didn't want to be outnumbered by project managers, so we needed to bring Adrian as a developer on to help us out, right?
Mm-hmm.
We needed some backup.
Yep.
So, Sean.
Yes.
Project management, how important is it really?
As you can tell by the way we started the call, if we had a project management, the first part of the call, we'd have gotten through that with much less awkwardness.
I'm going to fix it in post. It's great. I don't know what you're talking about.
Thoroughly thought through. Project management, I think, is critical to the ultimate success of any project. Despite all the jokes and one-liners, one of the ones I go back to is when Darren had said something to the effect of, there is no amount of development hours that can make up for 1 hour of planning. I really feel like that on projects. You know, sometimes just that ability to sit and think through and have a point person for things makes a huge difference to everyone's confidence and ability to execute on a project.
That ounce of planning and the pound of prevention, or however that goes, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
I think it's, you know, 80 hours of development can save you an hour of planning.
Is that how that works?
That is not very cost effective.
So Jessica, what they're trying to say is that project managers do more than send out status emails.
Yes. Yes, they do.
So Sean, you actually started as a developer at Lullabot. Am I correct with this?
I did. I was actually the first full-time front-end developer hired for my prowess in front-end skills and creating tables. No. just as being around Lullabot, my background's in management. I was in parks and recreation and was a supervisor, and so I've got a lot of experience in organizing and keeping things organized and facilitating and things of that nature. So it was kind of a natural evolution for me as we started to hire more and more front-end developers that we needed more and more help on projects. And so I'm starting to do project management and guide projects and get a group of developers working together towards a common task. And ultimately now for Lullabot, I'm a development manager, so I'm actually kind of lead the front-end team and make sure that information's going between us as team members and members of Lullabot. So yeah, all the way, it's been quite a journey.
So you were an accidental project manager, if you were.
I think that is very fair to say, yes.
Yeah, I'm saying that because Darren Peterson just had a blog post, an article up, The Accidental Project Manager. That's pretty interesting. We'll link to it in our show notes. So question for you, Sean. What is a business analyst?
Business analyst, let's see. I've been working in that role for a few months now. Kind of came up that one of our clients needed that. And what it has meant to me has been looking at the needs of the client, looking at what their goals are for a given quarter or for a given feature, and then trying to figure out what the technical tasks are related to that. So kind of the bridge between non-technical and technical, the idea of this is what we want to end up with, how do we get there? So it's kind of a communication bridge and a dialogue generator and facilitator of conversations to get to technical specs so developers have something to work on, that end result will look something like what the business owners wanted to accomplish.
What so it means to me, Mike, is that Sean goes to meetings and I don't have to go to them.
All right. So what I was going to ask is there a difference between a business analyst and a project manager? Is it just a title difference?
Jessica and I have worked really well together. Jessica's been on the project providing that technical project management role. Uh-huh. And what we found is where we try to divide up the work is Jessica's really focused on the day-to-days, and she can even talk more about that, whereas I'm focused on the 3 and 6 months in advance and kind of keeping tabs on what's happening now so that I'm kind of looking towards the future and what's upcoming, and Jessica's really focused on the now. So I've kind of found that as our breaking up the two roles between, me not getting too deep into project management. Mm-hmm. But it's still something we work on together because there's a lot of moving pieces.
Jessica, what is involved in the day-to-day as far as being a project manager?
Sure. So as Sean mentioned, after he's worked with the client and he's going to determine what tasks we need to get done for the month and hopefully get some priorities on those, basically then I'm going to be taking those projects and assigning them out to different people, looking at their current workload and then trying to assign based on that, assign based on skill level, and then going through those tickets a lot of times and making sure all of the details that we need are within those tickets, seeing if they need to be architected out anymore. Or there's even times me as a project manager, I'll go through and test some of these items just to make sure that, these are the tickets or issues that I really want the team to work on. It involves, we do daily stand-up, so making sure where everyone's at, is anyone stuck, do they need anything? And that's really, I think, a big difference here is, like Sean was mentioning, I'm really deep, I'm really involved with what everyone's currently working on and trying to help shepherd all of those issues through the queue to get them into the next stage, whether it's to peer review, to QA, and then the way that we're doing it is then to UAT, and then, finally out the door into our next release.
So what is UAT?
UAT is user acceptance testing. So the way that we're doing that right now is depending on the issue, it's going to get assigned to either a product owner or an engineer that has either requested that certain feature or bug fix or has a lot of background knowledge in it to be able to check whether or not the work that we have completed is accomplishing the goal for that ticket.
Okay. So estimating is always kind of, one of a developer's least favorite things to do because we always get it wrong. Where does estimation come in this process?
I don't like to be wrong.
You're always wrong.
Well, so estimation's a task that a lot of people ought to be involved in. And sometimes, it doesn't fall all the way down to the developers, but it really should. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, you'll see the pre-sales team at a company who may or may not have technical background be the ones to say, and it's going to cost one entire dollar to build your huge website. And then a project manager might receive only like the statement of work that says, this is what you're going to build, and never have had a chance to really do the estimation or just the outcome of that sales process. So it's really much better, as it turns out, to have the developers who are going to do the work get the chance to have their voice heard and maybe at the end of the day be able to raise some questions and concerns so that you don't end up with a statement of work you could never actually accomplish. But it is a really hard discipline to figure out, with very little detail sometimes, what it is that you're going to have to build and then therefore how long it would take, what it would cost, et cetera. And there's a lot of different ways to go about it. There's actually a really good book that is called, strangely enough, Estimation, The Art of Software Development. And it is. We can put the links up on the podcast about it. But this is a book that kind of goes through all the different ways that people approach estimates, from like asking experts what they think would happen, like asking a developer, how do you build it, all the way to things like comparing this project to previous projects that are somewhat similar just to get a general like order of magnitude size of how much do you, we think this is going to take in order to build. And there's one really specific approach that, that comes out of that book that that we use at Lullabot. It's called Wideband Delphi, which is a fancy name.
Now you're just making things up.
Right now, I'm pulling it out from nowhere.
With the warp capacitor.
Yeah, exactly. So Wideband Delphi is the notion that a developer or several developers go away into separate corners and estimate separately, and then they get back together and look at it and say, well, we've got, you know, this huge difference, this one particular task. You said it was going to take 10 weeks, and I said it was going to take a week. And that forces a conversation to say, why is it that you think so differently about this particular issue? And then suddenly you have all kinds of uncertainties or expectations or assumptions that, that can come to the surface because you're actually having a conversation about that. Mm-hmm. And you can settle down into a sort of a an agreement then between the developers about what it is that's actually going to be required after everybody has that conversation. And then you can come back to the client with an estimate that's actually informed by you know, a number of perspectives. So we do that at Lullabot a lot of the time in order to make our estimates not just be what came out of one person's head, but actually use it to sort of balance each other out. And we've built a spreadsheet around that whole discipline that we use, depending upon the project, if it's appropriate, which we've published online, so other people can try it out.
Yeah, I was going to say that I remember seeing that spreadsheet in a couple articles of estimation on our website. We'll link to that. It sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah, we have several articles because we evolved that process over time and sort of successively refined it. So our COO, Seth, you know, wrote the initial one, and then another of our PMs named Jared Bittner expounded upon that, and then we had a third version of it that came out later on, which is the, sort of the current spreadsheet we use. So it kind of tracks the development of that process a little bit over time.
Hey, Adrian, are you there?
Indeed I am.
Adrian, we haven't heard from you a whole lot yet because these project managers started talking about project managery things. So you as a developer, when you're on a project, what's a good thing, or what are some good skills for good project managers from your perspective?
Well, let's see. Certainly.
And to be clear, just so everybody, Adrian's not talking about the fine project managers we have at Lullabot, because Adrian's been off on his own working with other project managers, off on his own with a client without other Lullabots on the team. So what makes for a good project manager?
Yeah, I tend to land some of the solo or embedded gigs lately, and you will be working under the client's project manager, and I think that it's always an interesting thing to get started with, because, you know, with other Lullabots, I understand their style, and I know we have certain methodologies we use, but you don't always know what you're going to get from the client side. So somebody who is, you know, proactively communicating, certainly showing you the ropes in terms of what the internal processes are that you need to be aware of, you know, because every company is organized a little differently. Who do I talk to for this? You know, how does this process work, and all these sorts of things that you need to have in order to hit the ground running and be a, you know, productive member of their organization. But, you know, a lot of that, I should say, you may have to prompt for, and, you know, it's sort of incumbent on me when I'm in those situations to say, all right, I need to, you know, be very clear, ask a lot of questions, CC a lot of people on emails, and, you know, basically you're sort of tending the relationship with the client in a lot of ways, because you're the sole representative. And so there is a lot of responsibility, certainly on, I feel, on my part too, in that regard. So
what you're saying is just like help you get up and running and help you make sure questions are answered, et cetera?
I think so, yeah. And then, you know, from the day-to-day perspective, making sure that we don't have to, you know, we can concentrate as developers on the task at hand, right? I mean, if there is a story that were written that were the requirements were unclear, or something like that, some details need to be chased down, different teams within the company needed to collaborate in order to, you know, make something work. You know, generally, you know, the ideal project manager would be chasing all those things down and helping us negotiate that stuff so that, you know, we don't have to, we can spend our time doing what we do best, you know, writing code rather than trying to figure things out in an organization that we might not know, you know, a lot of the players in or a lot of the structure. So
makes a lot of sense. So let's talk meetings. Obviously, people don't really like meetings generally.
What?
except for Darren Peterson. How does a project manager go to, you know, kind of minimize the length of meetings, make sure they're effective, make sure that the tasks are clearly defined and all that good stuff? And what else am I missing there?
What makes for a good meeting?
Yeah. Besides cake.
Well, I think having an outline for a meeting before you go into it is really useful.
Okay.
I mean, that might be obvious. But the other thing is you have to be able and willing to speak up to try to keep that meeting on track. There's a lot of times where you're going to talk to, you know, an eager stakeholder, and they start talking about what the meeting was for, but then they get really excited and they might go off on a tangent. So you've got to be able to reel them back in and keep them on point, and maybe have, you know, a list of questions or a list of key items that you can bring back up, or kind of just let them, you know, gently let them know, you know, that's great. How about either we can, you know, put this aside for a later discussion, and then let's get back to what we have because we have X amount of, you know, minutes left. But that way, I guess, would be the other key is to try and, you know, time block yourself and make sure they're aware of it. We want to respect everyone's time. You know, respect their time, respect your time.
And making sure you have the right people for the meeting. You know, some meetings need to be postponed because you don't have the right people in the room, so that when you're done with that meeting, everybody who was there feels like they got something out of it or contributed. I think that's when you know you're running your meetings well.
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree with that, Sean. Thanks.
And that also goes the other way, wouldn't you say, Sean? I know that I've been in a number of meetings that I'm not useful in, right? So having the right people there so that you have the people to make the decision, and also have the right people there so that you can utilize people's time in the best way possible.
Exactly. I mean, sometimes, you know, the project managers, with what they have on their plate, they need feedback from somebody that they may not know they need feedback from, and or they may have somebody sit in on a meeting because they may know they have to follow up with them later. So I think sometimes when you're a project manager, you're doing some guessing around those tasks and who you want. And that's where communication is important with the team, which I think ultimately when you talk about a project manager, you're talking about the person who is responsible for that communication, for keeping those channels open, because you have to have those follow-up conversations. You have to adjust that as a project grows, so you learn who has what answers.
Darren, tell me about being an accidental project manager. I mean, did you just like walk into the wrong conference room one day, or how does that work?
it kind of is like that. I mean, like Sean, I was a developer first. I was a back-end developer, so I was doing SQL and PHP and all kinds of things, and twice I found myself at the team lead position in different organizations, one in higher ed and one in the private sector. And because I was willing to A, talk to the clients, and B, use a spreadsheet, and C, think like a business analyst, all of those things together came to the point where I ended up, you know, becoming a project manager full time as opposed to just doing it when I had to. Because if there was no project manager around, I had to pick up those tasks anyway, and so I kind of got good at them. And that's kind of the accidental project manager thing, is a lot of us came from design, from development, from someplace other than project management, because there's not a lot of places where you can get this kind of training. And so as an accidental project manager, you don't always know what skills you need. And trying to be like a developer who's thinking about the details of a particular implementation or whatever isn't actually all that helpful to a PM. Because being down in the weeds that far makes you miss the bigger picture, and you miss status updates or other things that could be really important. So that's a big question, is what skills do you need as a project manager when you didn't start out trying to be one? And that's kind of why I wrote the article that I did. The article that I've published is about risk management. You know, how do you foresee what's going to go wrong on the project and get out ahead of it and make sure that whoever needs to know about it does actually know about it? And that's not really something that necessarily a developer would think of first. They might be thinking about their, you know, do I have enough spaces in my code? Are my semicolons all present? I mean, all that kind of stuff. At that level of detail, it's tough to to look up and see the forest for the trees sometimes. So
I'm sure you meant tabs, not spaces, right?
Now there's a religious war, but that's okay. But that is the thing: is how do you get skills that you don't know you need, and so that's kind of the reason why I published that stuff about risk management, is for those of us that are just making the transition from developer or designer to PM, to be able to catch a glimpse of some of the other things that are out there that you may need to know about.
Now, there's a lot of education and certifications for project management, and I don't know much about it. Is that type of stuff valuable in the web development industry, or?
It's interesting, actually. The digital project management world is about 3 years old. There's been a community of digital project managers, quote unquote, and they've had conferences and they started to do local meetups and stuff like that. But until then, it was pretty much people that do the kind of work we do at the size that we do it. Which is to say, our projects take 3 or 4 months, maybe 5 sometimes, and have a certain dollar figure, maybe $1 million or less, that kind of thing. Those kinds of projects don't require the same level of, documentation and structure and really rigorous process that building a skyscraper would, or a battleship, which is where a lot of project management techniques come from, is that level of building an airplane. And so when we have not enough budget to really require the kinds of documentation and stuff that something like the PMP certification, the Project Management Professional certification, educates you about, you kind of got to wonder what you're supposed to do. Because a PMP certification is too much probably for what we do, although it's valuable. It's just overkill. They have 40 or 50 different kinds of deliverables documents that you could conceivably build out. And who wants to do that? When you're just trying to get tickets into JIRA and back out again, and so the certifications are not great, but there are ones that are more street level, like Scrum Master. And I think Sean, you probably have some experience with that, right?
With the trainings?
Yeah, like Scrum Master and some of those kinds of trainings, which are a little more practical.
No, I am actually probably the uber accidental project manager, where I am not, I'm kind of on that other side of that spectrum, where I'm actually the experiential. Everything I've learned has been through trial and error and working with developers and the actual businesses to figure out how to get it right and fine tune my skills.
But you're also selling yourself a bit short, Sean. You ran your own company for a while, right?
And this is true.
Along with, doing the development and that kind of thing. I mean, you obviously have to manage the project as well.
This is true. Yeah, I'm just not a read learner. I'm definitely the one that had to touch the fire to see that it was hot. That's just kind of how I've always been.
That's a pretty common use case, though. I know that there are some folks at Lullabot, and I'm sorry to put you on the spot there, Sean, but there are folks that have done Scrum Master training and stuff like that, which is great. And that can be really helpful to look at specific methodologies that help with agile development. But even those, you have to apply them selectively to whatever your client's willing to work with you on. So all the training comes with a grain of salt, but it's really good to have it so that you can see, what kinds of documents should I be thinking about, what kind of problems should I be trying to foresee, and the training's good for that stuff. It just doesn't always turn out the way that the training describes it for you.
I'm actually still signed up for one that Jessica had done and recommended to me, and I think I've been on the list for I think a year and a half now, but I keep putting it off. So I know I need to do that, but I know Jessica did one recently, or not recently, about a year ago now.
Yeah, Jessica, what is your background? I mean, we talked about how these guys fell into the role.
Yeah, I started off as a web designer and front-end developer, and I kind of am in the same boat where we didn't have any project managers on our team, and so every single designer and developer was their own project manager, and I kind of just really excelled at it, and so they decided to make me their first project manager, and from there, I went into the creative director role and overall design team manager, and I just really love the project management side of it. I love organizing and love facilitating the communication. So I'm kind of in the boat of learning as I go, but then as Sean said, I've taken different courses like the Scrum Master course to kind of learn about the different methodologies. And I'm going to echo what Darren said, which is it's great to learn it, but you got to pick and choose what you're going to actually apply to each project.
Are you a certified Scrum Master?
I am.
That is a cool title.
I know.
We're talking project management with three project managers from Lullabot and three developers from Lullabot. We're going to talk a little bit more about different tools that are used in project management and some methodologies coming up right after this. Hey, you're there finally, yeah?
I'm here.
Whoa, it's like a comedy of errors to actually talk to somebody over the internet these days.
Hey, I don't know. The call thing works well for us.
Sales and marketing lead Andrew Wilson. Hey, Drupalize Me.
How's it going?
I saw a blog post on the Lullabot blog that was a Drupalize Me blog post about $10 off. Now's your time. Hurry.
Hurry. Yeah, it ends Friday. $10 off forever. So if you sign up now, you'll keep getting that $10 off every month.
That's a pretty good deal. I mean, Drupalize Me is hang on, I always get this wrong and you scold me for it, but what is it? It's the most training videos anywhere.
Drupal training videos. You got it. Yeah.
Most Drupal training videos anywhere. And now you can get it for $10 off every month for forever.
Forever and ever and ever until you cancel your membership.
That means you can learn things about, hey, you know, we're talking about project management today. So there is a project management.
Project management.
There is a project management series on Drupalize Me, right?
There is definitely. So you can take a look at that. But a lot of people right now are interested in our new Drupal 8 tutorials. We've got a whole bunch, migrate, theming, Symfony stuff. So check those out. They're good for project managers too. You gotta know what you're talking about.
That's true. I think it helps the project managers to be able to talk the Drupal talk when they're, working with developers. It's good stuff.
Agreed. We've got a bunch of project management teams from various Drupal shops around the country that use Drupalize Me. So it's a good resource.
So when you sign up for a personal monthly membership at Drupalize Me and enter the code SAVE10 at checkout, you'll save $10 immediately and $10 every time your membership renews. But the sale ends Friday. So Andrew, one more question for you. Are the Warriors going to win tonight?
is that a real question?
Nice talking to you, Andrew.
See ya.
Welcome back. We're talking project management with, we have three Lullabot project managers on the line and also three developers. And we're talking everything project management and how and why they're awesome.
So Mike, my first job where I was building websites, the senior guy there looked at me and he said, fast, cheap, and good. Pick two.
I've seen that. Kind of cool. It makes sense.
So project managers, what do you think?
I'll take beer and wine.
What?
Was that not an option? Hey, sometimes that's what the client says. Trust me.
It makes sense to me.
Fast, cheap, and good is a pretty pretty common set of choices to have to make, and you have to pick two. It kind of ties into something called the Iron Triangle in project management. That it's a little bit like the Iron Throne in Game of Thrones. It's that bloody and that painful. No, the Iron Triangle is cost, scope, and time. So it's that same set of relationships. The trick is it's a triangle because you can't boost your scope without affecting the time it takes to build it and the cost of building that thing. And so, you know, if you want to make any changes, you have to necessarily change all the other factors accordingly. And that's kind of that thing. So when a client comes to you and says, "Hey, I want a pony," like, do you want a fast pony or a cheap pony?
So, have you guys heard of the conjoined triangle of success?
What?
I have not.
That's just like a really horrible reference to Silicon Valley HBO show. That's fantastic.
There you go. So we were talking about Scrum Masters before the break.
Yes.
And Jess, you were saying you were a certified Scrum Master. So Scrum...
Wait a minute. That was funny. I just want to let you guys know. Sorry. All right, Scrum Master.
So, Jessica, you were a certified Scrum Master, so that means that you are the person who knows what you need to know to lead a Scrum-style project, yeah?
Yes, basically. The Scrum Master certification is a quick, like, it's a three-day course, but basically you're learning about all of the different parts to Scrum and how to, you know, facilitate a project with that. And Scrum, basically, it's a team-based way of working, so you want to make sure... that, you know, all of your team members are working together. Everyone knows what everyone else is working on, and it's there to help people work together and make sure that we're all working towards a goal and we all help, you know, contribute to that bigger goal. I think Darren or Sean, do you want to elaborate more on that at all?
Sure. Well, just the notion of Scrum, besides the communication aspects of it, there's this other thing about that common goal. Usually the common goal is 2 or 3 or 4 week sprints where you have a bunch of work you're going to do within a certain time period. We call it a time box a lot of times, or a sprint. And so with a time boxed situation, you're looking to provide a demo at the end of that time that you could show the client and say, look how valuable the stuff we did was. And that's the other big thing about Scrum, is it runs in these little chunks of time. And so everybody's pulling toward that same goal, and you have a near-term demo that you're going to be trying to hit, which is really useful. And that we deliver projects that way, even if we don't do some of the other things that Scrum implies about, like maybe not planning right up front, because Scrum typically says you're going to cycle through and plan as you go. That doesn't always work when you're in a client services world. So we typically plan a bunch of stuff up front and then use the piece of Scrum where we iterate and cycle through the development process as opposed to the planning process. And that seems to work pretty well for us.
So why doesn't the planning up front work in a client services world?
Well, planning up front has to work in a client services world because they want to know what they're going to get at the end of the day after they've paid all the invoices. Mm-hmm. But classic Scrum is going to be... It was originally designed for like people inside a company, internal teams, where you would sit down and say, we want to build a thing. We want to build a contact management application. And everybody sort of blue sky thinks about all the things they want it to do, and they don't plan very much. They just say, these are all the features. And then they pick the first things they want to work on, and they cycle through that, and they keep refining what they want the software to do and how big it's going to be throughout the course of the project. And that's fine if you're dealing with monopoly money inside a company, but when you're paying actual dollars to a vendor like Lullabot, you typically want to know what you're going to get at the end of the day. And so they make us plan up front, and then we deliver in these ways that are these time boxes, sprints, which gives you a lot of chances to talk to your client. Say, this is what we built. Is this right? Which is great. That feedback is really important all the way through the process. But you can't not have a plan if you're going to be getting paid by the hour.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So what is Waterfall?
Waterfall is that big design up front. And what the original Waterfall stuff was like Defense Department contracts and stuff like that back in the 60s and 70s. And it had, you plan it, you write it down in a big document, like a big spec book. You accept those requirements, and then you go and build them, and it might take a year to build. Then you come back, and you give them the software that you built, according to the spec, whether or not anybody had ever seen it or whether or not that was actually what they need now. And that has the potential of, you know, writing software that nobody actually needs because the requirements changed while you were off building it for a year. So Waterfall has this reputation of being delivering software that nobody actually needs. If you ever heard of, like, you know, Defense Department software that no one ends up using, they spend billions on it. It's that kind of process.
Healthcare.gov.
Yeah, exactly. And so instead, you use something like Scrum where you iterate through the process and show the client a lot all over the course of the project what it is you're building, and they can give you feedback and make adjustments. And that makes for a lot better experience.
Gotcha. So is Lullabot's project somewhere in between, or in what do we do on a typical project?
Is there such thing as a typical project? Adrian, what's been your perspective? What kind of projects have you worked on recently as far as methodologies are concerned?
Well, you know, I just came up with this as Darren was talking. Currently, it's the Scrum model. And one thing that I noticed that was sort of an interesting departure is that it's me and then the internal team. Departure from what I'd been exposed to in the past is that sort of the goal, you pack the sprint with stories, and you want all those stories ideally to close at the end of the sprint, so then your demo contains new functionality, and you keep, you know, rolling from sprint to sprint, which has meant that the members of the team collaborate differently, whereas developers would assist with QA, for instance. So instead of just doing your one specialty in the interest of getting stories completed in a certain amount of time, that you might say, okay, well, let me just, you know, I can help you. There usually will be a QA specialist on the team, at least one, but if they become overwhelmed, you know, tickets tend to stack up near the end of the sprint sometimes, and they'll say, okay, well, you know, the developers will each grab a story that they didn't work on and assist with QA, and then that way you can kind of push everything at a more uniform rate
to avoid mm-hmm. bottlenecks. And so that's been one. And I don't know if that's unique, if that's a tenet of Scrum, or if that's simply the way that this organization likes to do things. And I don't know if one of the PMs might know more about the details, but I found that to be interesting.
And another similar methodology that I've been on projects is Kanban. And then I had been on projects and not fully understood it until Darren explained it to me. Tell me about Kanban.
Kanban comes from Toyota auto factories originally, in that it was a way that the people on the production line could determine how fast the work came to them, instead of, like, you know, have you seen the I Love Lucy episode with the chocolates where she's on the assembly line and she's like stuffing them down her shirt? That's what an assembly line might feel like. But Kanban says, no, I push the button and I ask for the next piece of work. And that's really what, especially if you're doing like a long-term product maintenance kind of a thing, mm-hmm. as opposed to brand new work on like the start of a new project. When you've been on a team in a while and you've got some flow going on, it works really well to stack up the backlog and say, here's the priorities, and then let the developers grab the next piece of work off the top and just keep rolling. And you can get really great efficiency and really great throughput and really high quality in that kind of a system, where you actually don't time box anymore. You don't do sprints as much as you grab work and you deliver it through and you deploy whenever it's ready.
And the priorities can change along the way, right?
Yeah. Whoever in the business side of it is prioritizing the backlog can change their mind anytime they want. And so the focus with Kanban is throughput, as opposed to chunks of delivered work like in Scrum. And the nice thing about Kanban is it also has this other tenet that says, besides laying out the process of the work and running the work through your various states, to do, doing, done, QA, whatever it may be, besides that, it also says limit the amount of work any developer does at any one given time, like maybe two tickets tops. And then what happens is you see big efficiency gains when people aren't distracted by seven things at once. And so between those basic ideas in Kanban, you can get all kinds of interesting stuff that eventually leads to a really efficient organization. So it's kind of cool.
It makes a lot of sense.
So let's talk about tools. Jira is kind of the de facto project management software these days, it seems. They even advertise on my Spotify, and it's kind of annoying. So, Sean, does Jira suck? Because that's what everybody says.
Everything sucks all the time.
Okay.
There is no perfect tool. There is no perfect one-size-fits-all.
So to be clear, Jira is like software, and you can create your tickets, which is like a task for a developer, and you can push it across to workflow and that kind of thing.
Yeah, so it basically gives you it gives you a very good ticket tracking system. I think that's one of the things that it's probably used for most often, so that you can define, you know, what fields you want, what information you want reported if you're setting up a task that needs to be completed, or what information you want if something needs to come in as a bug and work and discussion on that needs to be tracked. And Jira does a really good job of giving you some flexibility, forcing you into some patterns and some best practices, along with being a really good communication tool. There's so many times that as a project manager, if developers on the project, you know, if they want the PM to stay out of their hair, the best thing they can do is make sure they're moving tickets through the workflow and making comments as they go. Because then that's what the project manager is looking at to keep, you know, four, five, six multiple developers and a project on track all at the same time. And Jira has some great ways to report on that information and see things at a glance, so you know where you stand.
What other tools are out there besides Jira?
There's a lot. Liquid Planner and, gosh, trying to think of the ones that we have used at Lullabot.
I've used AtTask before.
Yep. Asana gets used a lot. There's a bunch of other ones out there. I think the trick with all of them is they all have a slightly different way to approach managing tickets. Usually there's some kind of categorization system, some grouping system where you can say these tasks are related to one another. And then there'll be other integrations like, for example, documentation or Basecamp or code like GitHub code may be able to integrate, and so you can reference the code base from the tickets, those kinds of things. And those are all really handy. I think, though, that the problem with Jira, since Jira is kind of the granddaddy that we see a lot on bigger kind of enterprise-style projects, Jira has all the integrations and all the tools, and it links up to its wiki really well, called Confluence. There's a lot of great stuff about it. It just seems intimidating for the person who hasn't used all that complexity that's in the machine. And, you know, so because of that, you see people kind of get intimidated and they don't understand it well because they aren't necessarily perfectly trained. But when you actually get into Jira, you know, if you need to, say, slice the whole pile of tickets down to, I just want to see the things that the front enders are doing, or I just want to see the things that we finished last week, boy, it's really powerful. And it's, you know, for someone who's trying to manage a big chunk of work, Jira is the really kind of the de facto standard right now. And I think it's really useful, even if it is kind of a pain to work with sometimes.
So do you work with do you have any other favorite ones? I mean, do you have any preference as far as like GitHub or do you prefer Jira?
It depends. For my part, I think Jira is the most useful when you're working with a large team.
All right.
If you're working with just a couple of people, you can use anything from a Trello board. And I'm actually using a Trello board right now, so I'm not a Jira addict per se. I've got a project that I'm sort of helping to manage on the side that Trello is the place to be because it's simple. And then GitHub, if you're working on a project that has either a private or a public Git repository, they have issues that link directly into the Jira code base, the GitHub code base and the GitHub pull request system. And so I've run a bunch of projects, even here at Lullabot, with teams of up to 3 or 4 people that it was perfectly fine to use GitHub and link the tasks together. It just doesn't have all the kind of robust categorization and segmenting tools that you can't put a bunch of fields on to categorize your tickets the way that Jira does. But GitHub works really, really well for a lot of things. You can put to-do lists in it with markdown syntax and a whole bunch of other nifty stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to use. What about standard spreadsheets? Do you guys make use of Excel or Google Sheets or anything like that?
And as much as people joke about Gantt charts and project managers, I haven't seen enough Gantt charts from you guys, from any of you. Like, in my time at Lullabot, I think I maybe have seen 2 Gantt charts. You really need to up that production.
We'll have a meeting. We'll figure that out.
Okay.
That's a great answer.
Yes.
Do you guys use Gantt charts?
Yeah. I mean, the trick is Gantt charts, who are they for, right? They're not really for developers because developers have the ticket system already. I find the Gantt charts are great for reporting upward about schedule.
Okay.
But they're not great for showing developers what to do unless you're, every so often trying to get everybody oriented on what's the whole span of things and what's the big picture.
And but that's why really you just hide them from me. I get it now.
Yeah, it's really not a tool that I typically put in front of developers because who cares? But yeah. It's great for people that are business stakeholders that need to know, are all the pieces moving forward at the right rate?
Yeah. So I feel like we need to explain what Gantt charts are. Everybody might not know.
Well, there was this guy named Gantt, and
his last name was Chart?
No, there was his last name was Gantt, and he was building battleships in the 1900s.
Okay.
Like for World War I. And he needed a chart that would describe all the different pieces of the project and let you know that there were dependencies between them. So, like, there was we should probably put up an example of this. We use a tool called Smartsheet at Lullabot when we're trying to do Gantts. And it basically just lets you list off the tasks and how long they're going to take. And it also lets you set dependencies so that, I can't eat my breakfast until I've made my fried egg. And so you put the fried egg as a task, and you put the eat the breakfast, and you chain them up together one after the other so that you can see the relationships between the tasks. And so that's what a Gantt chart is. It gives you the ability to see the whole project and identify what's called a critical path, like the things that all have to happen one after the other. So that's how long the project minimally could take. You're going to have to do all these things one after the other. They have to happen in order. And the Gantt chart lets you see that.
And when you're looking at it, it looks kind of visually like a timeline view, correct? Am I visualizing it correctly?
Yeah, like a set of stairs.
Yeah.
It looks like the waterfall diagram in Chrome DevTools, right, Mike?
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, very much like that. Jessica, you were going to say something.
Yeah, I would say we've used Gantt charts. I've seen, Darren, I think I saw one of yours earlier this year that you had done on a project, and I've done one as well. And as Darren was saying, it's really good at displaying those dependencies and illustrating to the stakeholders, you know, look, we have a start date and a finish date, so it's really good on those fixed bid projects to let them know that we're going to be doing development after, let's say, a design phase is done. And we know that based on initial wireframes, development's going to take X amount of time. So if the design period takes longer than what we've, you know, allotted here, that's going to push out the development time, which is then going to push out the QA time, which is then going to push out that completion date. So that's where it's really useful, is to let everyone understand and kind of see really quickly what, you know, the issues are going to be if any of those timelines change.
Yeah, it's... The nice thing about Smartsheet is when you change a task that has dependencies, it pushes all the other dependencies forward so that you can see the schedule change and the effect of, you know, the consequences of people not meeting their deadlines. So that's a useful thing to be able to show to a stakeholder and say, you need to decide what your design looks like so that we can get on to the process of building it.
So let's talk about pushing back against customers. How do you guys prevent feature creep, and how do you prevent shit from rolling downhill? We're marked as explicit in the app store, so it's all
okay. It's good.
It's totally cool. It's totally cool.
Well, that's a relief.
And that's for your actual response, Darren. That's why you preface that.
Right. Sean, how do you push back when clients are asking for unreasonable stuff? I know you have some of that sometimes.
Wow. You know, one of my developers once told me that I have a way of saying no by saying yes. and I think that's a tactic that I try to use, where I try to walk through steps. I mean, because obviously anybody involved with the project has outcomes that they need, things that they need to achieve. And so sometimes it's just a matter of setting priorities or working through what the best solution is that meets multiple needs. So a lot of time it is trying to not put people on the defensive, and it's trying to listen very intently with the understanding to work with someone to come to an ultimate solution.
So give me an example of that. Like, let's do some project manager stakeholder role play here, and Sean, I want you and your team to, I want you to develop this component, and I want you to fit it into the sprint just because so-and-so is telling me they need that as soon as possible. Can you get that done for me?
Man, hypotheticals are hard. I don't know. I don't know if we could walk through a hypothetical situation.
Okay.
It really is a case-by-case situation. So, mm-hmm. You know, in a situation like that, the first thing I would do is I would respond with, well, let's talk about what the need is. What are you trying to accomplish?
Yeah.
Let's talk about, is there lower-hanging fruit within that still gets you closer to the goal, because we either don't have the resources available, or because the resources are already dedicated to A, B, or C, or that conflicts with information that I have previously. So it really is. It's not a one-size-fits-all, which I think is where product managers earn their stripes. It is something that you have to care about the people involved. I think that good project managers do care, because you're looking for a shared solution.
Did you notice, Mike, that Sean just answered your question by saying he didn't want to answer your question, but here's an answer to your question?
As a matter of fact, I totally did not.
He's like, I don't want to play your game, so the requirements that you set on me aren't exactly right, but here's how we're actually going to do it. That's pretty good.
It's like it's a Jedi mind trick.
The trick is, Mike, how did you feel at the end of that conversation?
I felt great. I felt like a new person.
You even closed that great. Like, you made him feel like, you know, everybody involved is important. So that was nice.
This is a really important deal. I mean, the idea, the thing that we try to practice is to say yes and. So, Mike, you asked me, well, I really need a pony to be included in my website, or like cat pictures. I just need cat pictures on my website. Well, yes, I see why that's a strong business need that's going to be really valuable for your site visitors, and it doesn't fit within the priorities that we're already working on. So we could stop what we're doing now and make the cat pictures happen, or we could postpone it, put that cat pictures idea into the backlog, and then see where it fits against the other priorities that you have. And then everybody's like, oh, I feel heard, maybe. Mm-hmm. I feel like you recognize this is important to my business, but we still have to live within the context of what we've already built and what we're already working on, what you've already asked us to do, promises we've already made. And I think that was the thing I was hearing in Sean's comments a second ago is no request for a feature ever comes in a vacuum. It comes in the context of everything else that's already happening. And usually a client will come and say, hey, can I have this thing? And they don't think about all the other stuff that we're already doing or the context in which they're asking. Like it's right before the launch and suddenly they want to add like, you know, all this stuff to the project. Well, these are all good ideas, but not now.
Yeah.
And another thing I ran into recently, and a situation that's similar, and it's incredible what you can do just through communication and really understanding what their needs are. And I had a tricky bug that they had assigned to me, and I was digging around, and as it happened, because of the way some things had been built in the past, this was going to be a pretty serious expenditure of time. So I was able to go back to the business analysts and say, well, look, how critical is this? How many people are running into this? We did some analysis, and we came up with two workarounds that were approved by the editorial people, and we spent, you know, 2.5 hours on it and got them where they needed to be. But had you just read the ticket and tried to tackle it, the outcome could have been very different. So, you know, in the end, I think everybody was pretty happy and, you know, they saved money for things that they thought were more important.
It sounds like being a facilitator for open communication is really kind of the key.
I think so. I mean, you certainly, have a much clearer understanding of what the priorities are and that makes the work so much better. So,
yeah.
Because it's easy to pretend like you're just going to take orders. I'm a developer, you know, point me at something and let me solve it. But I find that, you know, the more you talk, even a little bit first, you get some surprising things happening. So,
you know, something else that kind of brings up is just like kind of setting the tone. You know, like you guys mentioned our COO, Seth Brown. I was on a project with him several years ago, and just like listening to him come in and talk to people and getting people to open up and getting people maybe to laugh or something like that, even when we were in crunch time and stuff like that, kind of made communication a lot easier. It made it funner. It made it less stressful, you know, and stuff like that. I thought it's very intangible, but I thought that was super important and honestly very impressive the way that he was able to do that. I don't know if there's any way you can do training for that.
I think it's just about being who you are and yeah, being a person and a member of the team. I mean, I've spent long nights sitting up where I wasn't actually all that useful to the project. I was testing things where I could, but I had developers that were working hard and late nights to try and hit a deadline. And I felt like just me being there was important, even if I wasn't like actually being able to. I wasn't 100% useful there. It was important that I be part of the team as far as that goes. But, you know, as everybody has got a different sense of humor, everybody's got a different style, but being that person for your team and also, you know, being able to shield them from some of the crap that may occur on a project and handle that at a managerial level, all that stuff's really important to keeping them, like, keeping the morale up, keeping people happy and being able to be productive. And Sean's got a whole different personality and approach about him, and Jessica too, but it's really important that you don't forget, you know, hey man, I'm here with these people and we're just going to take good care of each other, you know, and do it your own way, and it works out really well.
Yeah, so hey, I thought up a really difficult question for you guys. Are you ready?
I'm sorry, that's all we have for the call.
Right. we're going to have to put that in the backlog.
All right, let's talk scope reduction. Has there ever been a time where our SOW says we're going to do X, Y, and Z, and the conversation needs to be had with the client that says, hey, we're not going to get Z done? How do you guys handle that, and how do you break that to a client? Do you break it to a client? What happens?
Yes, you absolutely break it to a client, and I think you break it to the client if it happens as soon as you can. With that, I think it's extremely important to come with as much data and facts and reasoning as you can. And I think, in my experience anyway, as long as you are coming from a sincere place and that you do, it goes back to having the relationship with the client and that you care about them and you care about the project, and then you say, look, here's what's going on, here's what's happening, this feature that we're currently working on, it's taking longer for, you know, this reason, and because of that, we're running out of time, we're running out of, you know, resources, let's take a look at what we've got left. Let's start talking about what are the most important things we can do. And just, again, just coming to that place where you're working together, it's just, it's so important for them to trust you and for them to know that you're not trying to just say, okay, I'm going to wipe my hands clean, I'm done with you.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Having client involvement, then. Yeah. I mean, what I'm hearing, what I'm hearing is that, you know, you're really working as a partner, and the client is involved before that actually happens, and the client probably has a pretty good idea because they know what you're doing.
Hopefully, right.
Yeah, and trust. You know, you mentioned trust. That's hugely important. You know, in any project, even if you aren't having that conversation.
The thing that I find on that stuff is, if you do what Jessica said, tell the bad news as early as possible. Like, one of my earliest mistakes as a PM was probably, as a developer even, was trying to work harder to prevent the bad thing that I knew was going to happen. Like, we're not going to hit the deadline, I have to work harder. It almost never works. It's better to get out there and say to the client, hey, this is what we're seeing. We think we're going to be, you know, running late on this or whatever, and talk with them about how you can mitigate the problem that might cause. And do that early as opposed to hiding from that problem. But, I mean, at the same time, almost every project I'm on has some form of scope reduction at the end of the process before launch, because you look at where you're at and you look at what you want to be able to do, and there's a difference. And so the client and you have that conversation about, well, this thing's not really a launch blocker, that thing's not really a launch blocker, and you triage what's really important, and that's what makes it for launch. And that's a really common thing. So as long as you're communicating early, it's not actually a problem. It's super normal.
Well, Mike, I think Jessica and Sean are wanting this call to end so that I can deploy something to the UA2 server.
Deploy all the things, Matt, please.
Just a git push force.
I think so. Right? That's what the documentation says, so I'm going to go run that.
Trust FRA, right?
Sean, is there anything you'd like to add to the conversation?
No, I think that's great. I think, you know, for me, project management is about communication. That's nice that we kind of landed there. You know, communicate early, communicate often, and you want to operate from a position of no surprises.
Adrian Young.
Yes.
Any final thoughts?
Well, I'm not a project manager, so I'm manifestly unqualified to be here, but... I couldn't agree more with Sean, though. I mean, really, even as a developer, a huge part of my job is maintaining the healthy relationship with the client through communication. So if you can do that, I mean, you're far along to success, I think.
Darren Peterson.
I would say take advantage of the whatever access to other PMs that you can find in your life, whether that's a local meetup or a conference, or even if it's just reading up on the best blog post that you can find or listening to podcasts like this one. We often work alone, and we don't always get the chance to talk shop and sharpen our skills. So whatever opportunities you can find, man, take advantage of them.
Jessica Machetsky, final words?
My final words would be to be aware of everything that you can. I always am looking at all of the notifications that I get in email, or I'm watching our Slack channel just so that I can see what's going on and see if I can jump in and help. I love, you know, being there, and that way I can also help the client, whether it's, hey, I just saw that this is happening. So, yeah, be aware.
Mike, I'm always impressed with our project managers.
Yeah, I want to shout out to Jared Bittner, who hasn't been on this project. I was on a previous project with him, and he literally prevented me from attending probably weeks and weeks of meetings by just him being involved.
Because that means awesome. He's going to attend weeks and weeks of meetings and help that flow of communication in a more
efficient like
way.
He's like project manager Jesus going to meetings for our sins.
Ooh. Cue the organ music.
I've been told I'm psychic before.
You know what's weird? I totally knew you were going to say that.